again, and welcome to Musings on Golf, where we have so much to celebrate. The beloved Ricky Fowler gains a victory in the Motor City. Bernhard Langer sets a record on the PGA Tour Champions. The U.S. Women's Open, we're one day away from an iconic venue at Pebble Beach. And Michael Block, the individual story of the first half of 2023, is our guest today. Oh, and Bob, we celebrated the 247th birthday of our country yesterday. I hope you and Janice had some fun times.
Yeah, we really did. It's such a great holiday for me. And years ago, I decided that every time I see a firework explode, I think of somebody that gave their life to that we have this freedom. So a little awkward in that I had to do some work in London on the 4th of July. And, of course, it's not a great holiday over there. So we tap-toed around that enough. But it was a great 4th of July, and I hope everybody had a wonderful time.
Well, I hope so too. I did in the morning. I got to tell you, I played in a little scramble event here at my club in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, Bob, and our team ended up winning it. I think we won a grand total of a $15 golf shop credit. So a lot was on the line, and somehow I was able to come through.
Fantastic. That's at least one bag of teas, maybe two.
Maybe two. Exactly. Hey, how great was that with Ricky Fowler? I mean, I saw where Butch Harmon, for him, he said it was almost more emotional than some of the victories he helped Guy Tiger and Phil and some others with. It, you know, Ricky went from the lowest, right, 185th in the world. He's now 23rd, and over a span of 8 months, going back and leaning on Butch. And it just meant so much to him, Bob, as you can hear from what he had to say.
Definitely one of the main goals this year was to win. You know, outside of that was obviously playing well and doing what I've been doing, you know, to plan to make it to the Tour Championship. And one of the end goals was to be a part of the Ryder Cup team, and that's still what we're focusing on right now. Yeah, I was kind of just still and quiet, and everyone was going crazy around me. So it was a nice moment just to kind of feel like the weight on my shoulders was finally off.
Yeah, as he addresses there, he was he just soaked it in. I mean, I there wasn't any crazy celebration, Bob. It just meant so much. And the shots that he hit on 18 in regulation to about 3 feet to get him into the playoff, and then the shot he hit in the first hole of the playoff to about 12 feet to win it. It was a glorious, although not terribly demonstrative moment for a guy who so many people root for.
Well, you're right about that. Ricky Fowler, several years ago, finished in the top five in all four majors in 1 year. I mean, so that takes an incredible talent. He went on the dark side for a while. And then, you know, many argue Butch Harmon, the best teacher that has ever been, just did a few things. And you know, that's the thing about Butch. He reminds me a lot of Harvey Pinnick. You know, Harvey Pinnick is not going to operate. He may give you an aspirin. And I think that's what Butch does. He doles it out so that the player can accept it and then put it into play. And certainly Ricky Fowler did that in grand style at the Rocket Mortgage.
Yeah, and I know you've been around Ricky some, and he always impresses me, Bob, with sort of that level head. I mean, you see that when he plays. He doesn't seem to have too many peaks and valleys. And an incredibly likable and a guy who really much respects the game, its traditions. Even though he likes to dress in a fun way, he is very much in the moment, focused on his craft.
Yeah, he really is. And another thing that he's focused on, a lot of people bring it up, he adjusts his sunglasses more in one hole than most players do in 100 holes. So he has a little fetish there. I think it relieves his nerves somewhat, and he's put it into proper play.
Really excited to talk to Michael Block later on in the show. Just you talk about an incredible story over those 4 days at Oak Hill, Bob, and the incredible story, the remarkable tale of Bernhard Langer continues the victory at the U.S. Senior Open, passing Hale Irwin for all-time wins. you know, the physical condition he's kept himself in, the mental condition he's kept himself in. He's almost 66. Granted, maybe he doesn't play at the same level as when he was 51 or 56, but for goodness sakes, Bob, he's a marvel.
Well, hold on a minute there, my friend. I did a little research, and guess what? Bernhard Langer's mom is going to turn 100 next month. He is 34 years younger than his mother, so let's not look for Bernhard to be putting up that racket anytime soon.
It's all in the genes, isn't it? Remarkable. Just remarkable. Hey, I'm really excited. I'm excited for women's golf. I'm excited for the top players in the game. They're they couldn't be any more excited than to be teeing it up starting tomorrow. It'll be July the 6th at Pebble Beach for the U.S. Women's Open. It's going to be a great event. I know Michelle Wee West is making her swan song there. We have kind of a cool story. Amy Olson, who's playing the Women's Open at 7 months pregnant. It is iconic. And this event means so much to them. You know, we had Julie Inkster on a couple of weeks ago, and you can listen to that interview on Apple Podcasts and other places where you listen to your podcast. She gave that perspective, Bob, of playing in major championships. You know, she won seven of them. And to be able to see her, you know, her tour, if you will, playing the U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach is almost the ultimate in the way that the talk has been.
I can only think, you know, the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach probably be only second to the USGA holding a Women's Open at Augusta. I mean, Pebble Beach is iconic. I mean, people know Pebble Beach. They know that 18th tee, and most avid golf fans can see Jack leaning on that fence, looking out to the sea when he played his last U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. And interesting enough, I was waiting on the green for him that year, and he hit a good drive on 18. Everybody was happy. And then he hit one of his best three woods and managed to get it on the green. Here he is playing in his last U.S. Open, and he's on a par 5 and 2. However, he got so emotional, literally crying, and ended up three-putting his last hole. But still, it was a sight to behold, and what a glorious finish to a U.S. Open career, unequaled. And I'm sure the ladies this week are going to have a blast playing Pebble Beach, and you can almost guarantee that it's going to be an incredible winner.
Well, and Michael Block had a blast over four absolutely unbelievable days at the PGA Championship in May at Oak Hill Country Club outside of Rochester. Bob, it was a stirring time. A guy who very few people knew at all. And then 4 days later, on the first tee, he's getting a larger ovation than Rory McIlroy, with whom he played. Then he goes out and makes a hole-in-one, throwing it in the hole on the 15th in the final round. And it's almost that Hollywood story that you can't even script. I think it's the golf story of the year. Certainly we've had a lot going on with the legal stuff and so forth with Liv and the PGA Tour. But from a heartwarming standpoint, I'm not sure anything comes close to Michael Block.
Yeah, he's fantastic, and people are going to enjoy the interview. They're going to learn about the insides of Michael Block, of what's important to him. Just an update on Michael. Just got word that he went over to try and qualify for the British Open, or the Open Championship to be proper, and failed to do so. But I give him a lot of credit for making the effort, trying to get in the field. He's riding a dream right now.
Yeah, I'm glad he gave it a shot. And he's not going to be playing the Open Championship in Liverpool, but that's okay. It's all about the effort, and you're going to hear about all the effort he put forth at the PGA Championship when we hear from Michael Block right after this from our friends at Titleist.
The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to outperform. Created in Titleist R&D laboratories, manufactured in Titleist golf ball plants, and then validated by the best players in the world. These golf balls are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. And Robert,
What a thrill it is to be joined by the man who produced the most inspiring golf story of this year and arguably for many, many years. He went from being a PGA club professional from Southern California, known by relatively few in golf, to capturing the hearts of the sports world over four magical days at Oak Hill Country Club during the PGA Championship in May. Michael Block, thanks for what you have done for our great game, and welcome to Musings on Golf.
Hey, guys, thank you so much for having me, and just to hear those kind words puts chills right on my back.
Hey, Michael, Bob Boepka here, and I just want you to know I've covered over 127 majors, and the second most exciting one that I ever covered was the one that you just delighted golf fans everywhere, and extra special to me because I've been my best friends for my entire life have been club professionals. So out of 127, you came in second. That's pretty good, my friend.
I'm not even used to coming in second, Bob, so I'll take that, my friend. I can't wait to hear what number one is.
Well, it's pretty simple, and it's universally accepted. Maybe it's the most exciting major ever played. The year is 1986, Augusta, Georgia. Jack Nicklaus wins his sixth Masters, and I'm the first person to interview him on his way to Butler Cabin.
Wow, that is very, very cool. Yeah, I agree. That was amazing.
And Michael, that puts you in pretty high cotton, man, to be just behind Jack.
No, for sure. And I mean, honestly, I mean, I have yet to really, I never got to see what everyone else got to see as far as being on the other side. And so, you know, I've had a lot of people come up to me and tell me what, you know, what transpired for them during that event. And I have yet to really kind of sit back and see what it did. So I love hearing that stuff. And for it to be for you, Bob, the second is crazy to me because I'm just a golf aficionado, lover of the game. And to even be in the top 100 is amazing.
Well, obviously, you're a big fan of Jack Nicklaus. And this past summer, I had a birthday, and I got a little letter in the mail. Open it up. It's from Jack and Barbara Nicklaus wishing me a happy birthday.
So cool. I love it.
That's what a gentleman he really is. All right, Kelly, let's get to this. I know Michael, now that he gets $500 an hour for teaching, we can't keep too much of his time.
That's the low. That's the low number. Hey, Michael, you know, as we record this interview, it has been a few weeks. It's been about 5 weeks or so since those incredible rounds at Oak Hill. With your motto being, why not, I'm wondering, do you still, you know, 5 weeks later, still kind of pinch yourself that it all really and truly happened?
Yeah, honestly, Kelly, I haven't come down yet, to be dead honest, because life has been insane since that putt went in, and honestly, since that weekend. Life changed in a lot of ways, but it's been nonstop between, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth, and then up to Toronto, and then back down here, and then did some things up at LACC, trying to get my work done in between at the club, and then I'm off to Scotland tomorrow morning. So yeah, I haven't even been able to comprehend what's really happened, but life's good. I'm not complaining about any of it, and it's all been positive things.
What's taking you to Scotland? Are you going to try to qualify for the Open Championship?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. I'm going to be at Dundonald Links on July 4th, playing 36 holes against, I believe, around 60, 70 people. And I think there's four or five spots available, and it'd be a dream of mine to be able to play in the Open. I've yet to do that, so that'd be cool.
It sure will be cool. When they see your name on that starter sheet, they're going to be a nervous wreck.
I just got it here a little bit ago, and I saw Kuchar's in there and a couple other tour pros. There's probably about 10 PGA Tour guys that are making the trip to actually do it. They're in Scotland as well, so that's exciting. You know, I'm sure they're playing the Scottish Open, and they're going to be cruising over and trying to qualify.
Michael, let me ask you a question that I've been thinking about ever since Oak Hill. Why do you think you played so well at Oak Hill? It was such a demanding golf course, a thorough examination of golfing ability. Can you pinpoint a couple of reasons why you played so well?
Number one was the fairways. The fairways, the first, you know, during the practice rounds and during the first two rounds, were rolling at a 14 in themselves. I mean, if you got the ball beaten down the fairway, it would roll out 50, 60 yards, which is a huge advantage for me being a 47-year-old club professional. Obviously, it's swinging 110 miles an hour. So keeping in the fairway was crucial. The rollout was crucial. And then my irons were pretty good that week, but even better was the putting. I felt very comfortable on the greens. I feel like the loft of my putter was ideal for the speed and that type of green. And I just felt comfortable out there. The hole looked big to me. And, you know, when the hole looks 5 inches compared to some days, it looks like 2.5 inches. That's a huge thing. And it lasted the first 3 days. The last round, the hole didn't look as big when I was putting, but I did. I was fortunate enough, obviously, for that hole in one on 15 and a couple good up and downs coming in.
Michael Block joining us on Musings on Golf. You know, I was sitting here in Florida when I saw your interview that Thursday with Curtis Strange and Scott Van Pelt on ESPN as you're walking up the drivable par 4 14th at Oak Hill. And I think you were even par or one over at that point. That's where everybody really got to know you, at least for the first time, through the magic of television. Was that something being mic'd up? Was that something you volunteered? Did the PGA ask you? How did it come to be that you were the guy among the 20 club professionals in the field?
Yeah, somehow the PGA of America picked me out and asked me if I would do that. And I was like, absolutely. That'd be my honor to be interviewed by those fine gentlemen. So I had no problem with it whatsoever. But it put an added pressure on me because I was like, which hole do you guys want to do? And they're like, 14. I'm like, oh, geez. I'm like, I got to play 13 holes before I get to that. And I really don't want to. I really don't want to be 10 over par when I'm having this conversation, because that'd be pretty embarrassing. So yeah. I'd gotten back to even par, I believe, right before I went birdie right before hole 14. And so I was even par talking to SVP and Curtis, and that felt pretty good in itself.
Well, I know Curtis was extremely impressed, and I don't think he's the easiest guy to be impressed by anybody. So that was really great to hear what he had to say to you once that interview ended. You played the first 36 holes, shot 70 both rounds. I know that being the low club professional had been the goal, but now you're only, what, 5 shots out of the lead midway through the championship. Michael, at that point, you got it clinched as far as being the low club professional. Does your approach change going, man, I'm right in the hunt?
Yeah, I mean, I had nothing to lose, right? I mean, I had the low club pro. No one else made the cut. I'm good to go on that, which was my goals. I had two goals. Low club professional, make the cut in a major. So I had both of those done. I honestly didn't have any more goals in my life in golf at that point. So it was just go for it. And I had a great pairing with Rosie on Saturday. It was raining and the weather was dirty. I mean, I had rain pants on the whole time. I thought the course was going to get closed down. I thought we were going to be delayed to maybe later that day or the next day, but it never happened. The course drained wonderfully and went out there and shot another 70 in the rain with Rosie, which is cool. And all of a sudden, I'm in eighth place going to the final round with my awesome pairing going to Sunday.
Yeah, how was Justin to play with? Was he pretty cool?
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I could not have asked for a better four individuals between Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to play with.
Who'd you play with the first two rounds?
Hayden Buckley and Taylor Pendrith. So Hayden went to Missouri, which I'm from St. Louis originally. So that was cool. And then Taylor Pendrith is from Canada and is good friends with Adam Long, actually. And so we were having some good chats about Adam and his family.
Yeah, Adam Long, who plays on the PGA Tour. His dad, Gordon, is a buddy of mine here at East Point Country Club in Palm Beach Gardens. Michael Block joining us. You got to know the emotions for you on the first tee on Sunday. You easily had the loudest roar. Can you give any kind of perspective? That had to send some chills through you. It had to be almost surreal in a way, wasn't it?
I am 100% your everyday fan of golf. I love watching golf my whole life. I've never been under that situation in my entire life. So it was the first time ever. I'd never been there on a Sunday. I never teed off on a Sunday major ever in my life. So I basically went from the couch to playing with Rory McIlroy in the final round of a major with the fans all of a sudden behind me 100%. So, yeah, so if whatever you think might happen, it's exactly that. If you're a fan like I am, and it was a dream come true, and I was lucky enough not to embarrass myself too much.
Hey, Michael, it's one thing to be playing with Rory McIlroy. It's a completely different set of circumstances when you get a big bear hug from Rory after you made the hole in one. You had to be thinking, good golly, Miss Molly, what's going on here?
Oh man, I'll tell you what. Yes. I mean, I didn't see it go in, as I think everyone kind of knows. I'm old and my eyes aren't that great. And my caddy's looking through his laser trying to see it. He thought it went short or long. He couldn't tell. So the first inkling of an idea that it went in the hole, to be honest, was Rory turning around, walking back up the slope, coming to give me a hug. And so for Rory to be the one telling me what had happened in reality is something I'll never forget.
Do you still have that golf ball?
I do. I've got the golf ball. I've got the I got the pin sheet for the day with that hole location that I had circled and drawn on the green, and the yardage book. I've got everything. I've got it all, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the Cinderella story clearly was not just making a hole in one, but flying the ball straight into the hole. I mean, have you? I don't think you'd ever done that before. Have you ever even played with somebody before who just threw it in on the fly?
No, not at all. Never had that happen. Never seen it happen. I mean, even just yesterday, I was playing with my kids in the afternoon, and I had a pitching wedge into hole two, and my ball was literally flying directly into the hole from about 136, and it hit the bottom of the stick, kicked off the green, and into the bunker. This is yesterday, and I'm just going. I was laughing about it because, I mean, I was frustrated too, but I'm going, that's what easily could have happened on 15 at Oak Hill. I mean, I could have easily, you know, gone off in the left bunker, gone off the right where Rory was. I mean, it would have been a bogey, double bogey if that hits the stick and goes flying, but it didn't. It absolutely in the perfect spot in the pin, on the hole, in the front left edge. And it went in. It was crazy.
You know, Michael, you did so much for club pros all around the world that, guys, as you well know, I don't have to tell you, they work hard. They work long hours. It's not about the money. It's all about the game. And the thrill that you were describing when you were at Oak Hill about how excited you were that your sons were part of what was going on with you was so touching.
Yeah. I mean, first off, the PGA professionals, they're the unsung heroes of golf, right? They're the ones that are 5 o'clock in the morning, and the guys that are there until 9 p.m. at night running the members, the member guests, the club championships, that the other golfers in the world get to thoroughly enjoy and why they love golf so much. I knew for a fact my entire life that I was going to be driving into a golf course, and it didn't matter to me if I was the caddy, the outside service guy, if I was the starter or the general manager. It didn't matter to me. I was going to be going to a golf course. And then for the fact going into the second part, having two boys that love golf as much as I do, I feel like I'm the luckiest human being in the world because they could so easily love other sports, love something else in the world. But for some reason, they fell in love with the sport as much as I have. And the fact that they want to go to the golf course and spend their time with their dad is something that, makes me emotional, and I feel very lucky to have.
I'm sure you heard the number before, but I calculated with your winnings at Oak Hill that you would have had to give over 1,900 lessons at your club to earn that amount of money. When you think of it in those terms, it's literally mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's a lot less gray hairs, so I'll have a little more. Yeah, it's a lot less gray hairs that I'll have, which is great. Yeah, it's mind-boggling between that. For me to win $288,000 playing golf, I would have personally paid $10,000 just to have the experience, much less get money for it. The only reason I was even there is because of PGA of America. You can't qualify for it. You can't be in it, and you can't play in it, and you can't win any money doing it unless you're in the PGA. And I'm a proud PGA member, and that's the only reason I was there.
Hey, I'm interested. You were talking about the passion that your kids have for the game. Was that for you when you were a kid? Was golf the sport and the love for it caught early in your life?
Yeah, I mean, I played them all. I played, baseball was my deal. I was a pitcher and shortstop for my little league team. I was a big tennis player. I actually played 4 years of varsity tennis in high school and only 1 year, my senior year of golf. Mainly because my best friend was a tennis player, so I gravitated towards that a little bit. But every weekend, it was golf with my dad. So every single Saturday and Sunday morning, I was in the car with my dad at 6 a.m. for that 7 o'clock time with the boys. Whether I was in bed at 10 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning, I was headed out there with my dad no matter what. And yeah, he definitely put the love of golf into my blood. There's no doubt about it.
What's the first set of clubs you ever had?
A set of cut down Titleist DCIs. I don't know if you guys remember. There's like a, remember there's a black diamond and a gold diamond.
I had them. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. The DCIs. And then I had the old Titleist PT 13 degree three wood, which was just unbelievable. And I believe the other, the driver was a Callaway Big Bertha. And I swear it was like a 7.5 degree Big Bertha, great Big Bertha. I forget what it was, but the original one. And yeah, I remember the, those guys. And I'll never forget the first putter I ever had was a Ping Answer that I got when I broke 100 for the first time at the Rock Island and Arsenal Golf Club in Davenport, Iowa. Yeah, and I still have it to this day. I have it literally sitting here in my my son's room.
Well, we can't thank you enough for your time, Michael. You've been a delight to spend some time with. And final question from me. With this success at the PGA Championship, has any thoughts popped in your head about maybe giving it a try on the PGA Tour Champions?
You know, so my wife has. I'm a very happy club pro. I'm a very, very happy guy going to the club every day. Now, of course, you know, I'll be probably exempt to maybe the finals or something like that in the senior, you know, Champions Tour qualifier. And I'll have a tough time not at least going to it and getting some status if I can. And maybe some exemptions when I do turn 50. I'm already in the PGA Championship, the senior PGA, when I do turn 50 due to winning the Club Pro National Championship in 2014. So I've got a couple of things the year I do turn 50 already in the works. So, you know, if I go out there, do I want to be on it full time? No, I never will be. Can I go out there and maybe pick 10 spots and go have a great time? Absolutely.
Hey, I know you tried the Q School to play on tour only once. Can you, do you mind telling that story again, having to do, I think Sonny Skinner, who was a terrific PGA Club professional player, had a lot of influence on you not pursuing the life of a tour professional. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. So I was, my first job was at the Lakes Country Club in Palm Desert, and the membership there had a barbecue for me. And it was, they raised like $10,000 and they said, Michael, you're taking the summer off and you're going to go to Q School. Cause I just won the California State Open and they're like, you need to go do it. And I'm like, oh, I don't really want to. And they're like, you're going to go do it. And I'm like, okay, fine. So I took the summer off and I ended up going to Q School. I got through first stage, went to second stage at TPC Craig Ranch. And there's Sonny Skinner, who's about 5 foot nothing, hitting balls next to me. And I mean, he's hitting like 250, right? And this TPC Craig Ranch is long. And I go out there, I golf my ball. I felt like it was a good day. It was cold, it was windy. I thought every hole was a par five and they're actually par fours. And I shoot 73. I'm like, okay, that was pretty solid, you know, whatever. And I look at the leaderboard and there's Sonny Skinner, 66. And and I'm like, I'm done. I go, that's it. I go, I didn't want to come here. I'm not, I'm done. I give up after this first round. And I even if I made it, I'm just going, I don't have that. I didn't have it at that point. And so
I mean,
it
dawned on you that quickly? Like
100%.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it did. I'm so glad it did. I figured out very young and very early that I'm meant to be a club professional, and I was meant for it. And I knew it in my heart. And Sonny proved it. And I'm happy for him. And I told him that story maybe only like 3 or 4 years ago. I saw him at a national championship, and I said, Sonny, I got to tell you a story, brother. And I told him about it, and he was like, "You got to be kidding me." I'm like, "No, it's dead true."
Well, when you were nice enough to agree to do this interview, I reached out to some friends and said, hey, I'm going to be talking with Michael Block. Do you have a couple questions for him? So if you don't mind, I've got a couple of instruction-related questions to run by you. Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. What would you recommend for amateur golfers in particular to make their practice sessions more effective, whether it's an outstanding player or just a weekend golfer? How do they improve on the range?
Yeah, so I've given a lot of lessons in my life, and then my favorite thing to do is to take those individuals on the golf course for playing lessons, because what I see on the range in their swing, mainly tempo, and what I see on the golf course is two different human beings. You know, on the driving range, they're smooth and they're silky and they're relaxed and all these things, and they're and the biggest thing is their alignment's great on the driving range because everything's, you know, congruent and square to the target line. When they get on the golf course, side hill lies, whatever. All of a sudden, I've seen this guy for, you know, 3 years, and he's set up square every time in a lesson. I take him on the golf course one time. He's aiming 30 yards right with his feet. He's aiming 30 yards left with his shoulder line and his forearm line. And I'm like, oh, who's this guy? I've never met you before. Nice to meet you. I'm Michael Block.
That's the longest walk in golf, Michael. I know it from experience, from the driving range to the first tee. I had many a friend that they pured it on the range, shanked it on the course.
So should they be thinking, should the amateur player be thinking differently about his or her practice session approach?
Yes, 100%. It should be their practice session should only be target-oriented, driving-oriented. They're hitting a drive in between two specific targets, putting pressure on themselves, aligning up as they are going through the routine, starting behind the golf ball, walking up to it. And more than anything is using their eye line and looking up at the target more than looking down at the ball. If you watch the tour professionals, and it's the coolest thing in the world, if you watch their routines while they're in the middle of the tournament, their eyes are at the target 80% of the time. Mm. Now, I feel that when amateurs set up to the golf ball, their eyes are down at the golf ball and at the ground, at their feet and their hands, 80 to 90% of the time, and they almost never look up at the target. So I strongly recommend using more of their natural tendencies and coordination level with their hands and their, you know, basically their hand-eye coordination. And use it. Use the eyes and just picture the shot. Because it's the opposite between what I see between an amateur and a tour professional.
And Michael, in terms of the setup, is there a method that you have in terms of setting up to the golf ball, some sort of mental or physical commitment that you make to that golf swing before you hit it? That at least a thought then of what the average person should do as far as to maximize that setup and that preparation to hit a shot.
Absolutely. I stand behind it about 10 feet. I commit to the line. I commit to the target. I give myself the utmost confidence, tell myself how good looking I am that day or how tall I am or whatever it might be. I'm giving myself confidence because, you know, everything else in your brain wants to defeat you and give you no confidence. And as you know, in golf, you have to have confidence over it. So you walk up to it with the utmost confidence. Club face to the target's number one. Do not set up your feet. Do not put the grip on. Club face to the target. So you lay that club behind the ball and take your sweet time at this point. This is where you take your sweet time. Aim that club face at your target. Then look down, put your feet parallel to your club face. Then you set up over it. You take your grip, you breathe, you relax. You look at your target like what I was talking about. You're visualizing it as you're looking at your target and your shot shape. And once your eyes get back to the golf ball, go ahead and let it go, because if you stand over it too long, you're going to ice yourself. And as I say, and, you know, the last thing I ever want to do is ice myself. You're not playing football. You're not the kicker. You know, you're not going to have some coach call you, hey, you got to take a time out here. No, you set up, your eyes get back, release it, let it go.
I can only imagine at your current rate for teaching, we just rang up a heck of a bill to get all those valuable lessons from you, Michael. We can't thank you enough. I'm speaking for Kelly, speaking for myself, and I'm really speaking for the many, many club pros that have been friends of mine my entire life. You're a real tribute to the sport, Michael, and I can't bestow any higher honor than having somebody a tribute to golf, which I love dearly. Thanks for your time, Michael.
Now, Bob, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate those comments. And thank you, Kelly. I appreciate you guys having me on. And I listened to Bob Ford, who you guys were interviewing. And he's my idol. And he's the GOAT of the PGA of America. And just to be following him up is an honor.
When you make the best performing golf balls in the world, your biggest competition is yourself. And now the golf ball that sets the standard for every other has raised the bar again. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Bob, he just impresses me in so many ways. A true PGA club professional, great game, and the type of personality and the type of individual you root for. You want him to succeed, and you saw that in the way people reacted to him at Oak Hill.
Yeah, and just an update, further update. He failed to make the Open Championship. So, Michael, best of luck from all of your fans here on Musings on Golf.
Absolutely. We thank Michael Block. And next week, as we begin our countdown to the 151st Open Championship, we're going to be joined by Martin Slumbers, the CEO of the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews, which puts on the Open Championship. We're also going to be joined a little bit later after that by Tommy Roy, the longtime producer of NBC Sports Golf Coverage. Bob, we're counting down the days, baby, to the 151st Open Championship. It's going to be another big one.
As to over my entire career. Bob, if you could only do one tournament a year, which would it be? And I don't even hesitate. It's the Open Championship. There's something about it. The fans are so knowledgeable. They appreciate golf. I mean, golf's more a religion over there than it is a sport. And when you go over there, yeah, you get infected with how strong they feel about the sport. They love talking about it. They love playing it. They love watching it. The Open Championship stands way above any other tournament in the history of golf.
Well, beautifully said, and hoping all of you had a great fourth. Keep it straight down the middle. For Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin signing off, Musings on Golf.